one of your Indianapolis Colts cheerleaders, and you're watching the Believe in Colts podcast.
Welcome back to Believe in Colts. I'm Lawrence Horn. With me, as usual, is my guy. Oh, there you are. Donald Thomas. And today, obviously, this is not Victory Monday. All right. This is holy crap. What did we just witness on Sunday, Monday? That's what we're actually going to be going over. The Indianapolis Colts look nothing like what we have seen for most of the season in reality. I mean, this is the first real true blowout that I've seen the Indianapolis Colts have, you know, in the negative all year. Even the Jacksonville loss that we had the second time we played did not look this bad. What was your initial reaction after the game on Sunday, Donald?
Just exactly what sometimes the Colts will do is just be super unpredictable, and sometimes you don't know what team you're going to get. I think yesterday was exactly that. It was more so of, who is this team? What are we watching? What is going on? Do they understand the severity of the situation? I just think that the cart was put a little bit before the horse on this game, so to speak, and enjoy a win, dance in the locker room, but we got to take care of business the following week. And so that's clearly what did not happen yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to go over with this game because, I mean, blame can be spread around to a lot of different people. Before we get into it, I want to remind everybody that BetOnline is still your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, NFL, NBA, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device today and sign up. Get in on that action. Remember, use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% rewards on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, first and foremost, all right, there's a lot of blame. And there's a lot of blame being thrown at Gardner Minshew in this game. And I'm going to be perfectly frank and honest here. As I watched it, I rewatched that game three times afterwards. Three times. I watched it once yesterday afterwards, twice today. I thought Gardner Minshew actually played a decent game. From what I was seeing, there was no plays to me where I looked at and go, what the hell are you doing? You know, from what I saw, it was pretty reasonable from what happened. His accuracy wasn't awful. There was a few plays where the ball could have been placed a little bit different spots, but especially like, let's say, the Granson pass or the Alec Pierce pass. Now, those plays also were a little bit down the field, but I didn't see horrible play call. Horrible pass attempts where it's like 5 yards off the target, stuff like that. He was still 66% completion percentage. That strip sack that he had, that wasn't even his fault. He was in the midst of throwing the football and Trey Hendrickson just burnt Bernard Raimann terribly, terribly, and then was able to swat the ball as he was bringing it back to pass, you know, which happens. And credit Trey Hendrickson on that. But I thought overall, offensively, I thought the quarterback actually played a better game than the other positions on the team. I'm not saying he was perfect. I'm not saying he was great. I'm just saying he was not awful. You disagreeing with me?
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I was going to ask you a question. If he's not to blame, then who is? But before you answer that, when you are as quarterback, mm-hmm. you are going to fall on the sword first. Mm-hmm. How it goes, right? Like, it's, I mean, you can say, like, defense gave up this, or, you know, so and so did this, but at the end of the day, it's just like you're going to take the first eye of scrutiny in everything, right? So they got blown out. They didn't play well. Defense couldn't stop plays, big plays from happening. Run game was ineffective, but it's always going to be Gardner's fault. That's just how it is. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, but at the end of the day, you know, I don't know, man. It just see you. You when if you celebrate and you're happy and you can do all that, but you got to come back the following week and follow up with a great performance. Like you just got to lead your troops into battle. But you're always going to be the first one that's going to get the finger pointed at. It just is what it is. It's like, why do you get paid the big bucks? It's like what you signed up for. It's why you love playing quarterback. You accepted all that. So could Gardner's play have been better? When you're not the starting quarterback, when you're not the guy who everyone thought was going to be the guy that was going to start the season off and we were going to really put the team on your back, and now when you don't win a game, you're going to take the rap first and foremost before anybody else does. It just is what it is. There's a guy who commented, I hope you're watching this today, right, where I was, when you asked me last week about Gardner Minshew mania, I said, no, it's not Minshew mania anymore. Like, he's managing football games. He's doing this, but no one's like waiting to see Minshew come out here and throw for 350, 400 yards every game. Like, we all know that's not happening. Like, we all know that when you come out of nowhere and catch people by surprise, then you're going to get the hype of Minshew mania like he got back in Jacksonville. But you're not going to get that anymore. Like, people know who you are. People know what kind of quarterback you are. So at the end of the day, like, you can't be one way one week and then another way the other week because you're not the guy initially. So if you lose a game, you're getting the finger pointed at first before anybody else because he's not as good as Anthony Richardson or the other starting quarterbacks. Like, this is what we suspected, blah, 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 blah. Like, you just got to take it. It's just part of the game. It just is what it is.
I mean, everybody has bad games. I mean, I don't know how many people out here watched the Texans-Jets game, but C.J. Stroud was awful in that game. I mean, he was completely blown up. Look, in my opinion,
But who gets more grace in the situation? Stroud. Does Stroud get more grace, or does Minshew?
Stroud's going to, because he's
a rookie. Okay. And he's the guy who everyone put high draft pick starting, blah blah blah. And you've done well. You've exceeded expectations. Now all of a sudden you have a bad game. It's part of the growing process. It's part of the maturation deal, right? It's part of rookie getting the jitters out, all the above, right? So he gets more grace than Gardner does in that situation. It just happens to be how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah,
you know. So go ahead. I don't want to throw it up.
No, you're good. See, in my opinion, I'm looking at this now. First off, there was a lot of passes where receivers got two hands on the ball and did not come down with it. I get the football hit the top of the helmet on that pass to Granson. Granson still had both his arms over the head, should have came down with the football. The hands hit Alec Pierce. It could have been led better, yes, but Alec Pierce still got his hands on it, should have come down with it. The throw over the middle to Drew Ogletree, was it a awkward-looking, you know, placement? Maybe, but Ogletree got both his hands on it. You know, those are plays that need to come down with. Still, even with that, by far and away, the worst group was the offensive line on the offense. The offensive line was unable to make holes for the running back, especially up the gut from the majority of the game, and they could not pass protect. Gardner Minshew was under pressure the entire night, and it wasn't just Trey Hendrickson. It was, you know, different positions all over the place. So I got a question from you. Is I want to know, what did you see from the offensive line? What happened there that, you know, got this Colts offensive line humming on all cylinders the last few weeks to this past Sunday, just looking like hot garbage out there on the field?
Just inconsistency in leadership. I'm just going to be point blank with you. And you're going to have games where everyone's going to have a day. Everybody's going to have their day. Every group's going to have their day. You know, you can pick and choose. But, like, as offensive linemen, offensive line play, like, you can't have a day. Like, consistently, like, if one guy has a few bad plays or he's got to pick his play up, that's one guy. But when you have collectively everyone, you can cherry pick, play here, play here, play here for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not going to work, right? So, like, it just was, like, point of attack. It was just lack of running off the football. Point of attack was just like, if you saw it, you watched the game three times, so you've seen it even more than me. But you can usually tell, like, as an offensive lineman, like, when I'm watching the game, if that's going to be a good run or not from the jump. It ain't the handoff. It ain't any the receivers blocking on the outside. I'm looking at in the middle, did the guy get on his angle? How did he come off the football? Do we have a chance to get at least 3 to 4 yards just by them doing that? And it was very rare when you saw that happen this game. I really didn't see it at all. Like, everything was like stalemate. Like, you know, like, Zach really never had a chance to, like, get going, get momentum, hit a hole hard. Everything was pitter-patter, trying to find something. Guys getting blown back into the backfield. Like, you see one lineman get blown back, nine times out of ten, it's not going to be a good play unless it's an outside run and you're running away from that. But if he's on the front side of that, the play's doomed from the start. So, it's just lack of consistency. I don't really feel like everybody just took that, like, the offensive line as a group, like, you've got to understand the severity of the situation at all times. You got to understand the severity of the actual the game and how it's going to be played. And if runs through that group, I didn't see that. I did not see that on yesterday. But I want to ask you a question though, Lawrence.
Go ahead.
The offensive line. You know, we know that they did not play well yesterday. They know they didn't play well yesterday. They know that they left a lot out there on the field. When they go back and watch this film, it's going to be very disturbing for them to really look at it because, honest to God, truth, the game starts up front, offense, defensive line. But before we segue to that, you asked me, or you said, Alec Pierce, that he Granson, you know, Minshew, with throwing these receivers the balls, right?
Ogletree, yeah.
Ogletree, right? You picked out the plays. But let me ask you a question, though, right? You said they were catchable, like one, you know, on the helmet, both hands of the ball, but how many guys are making that catch in the NFL? How many guys are making that catch? But here's the deal.
Those catches are probably, I would say, 50-50. I mean, that's considering, right?
50-50 balls, right?
Yes.
Now, think about, okay, so now we're going to say the 50-50 balls, right? But then again, at the same time, how many guys are coming up with those 50-50 balls consistently in the league?
Those are your number one guys.
Right. So that leads me to my next question, right? Or my segue to the next part of my statement is, are these the guys to make those plays? Are they ready to make those plays? Can they handle making those big-time plays? Like, how many guys in the league can make those big-time plays? Do we have a guy, really honest to God truth, in a game like this that's very important? Every game is super important to make a play like that. Like, when you got to have a play, can they make a play? Or do we got to go get a guy that's going to make that play? And that's all I've been saying about the whole paying somebody, you know, top as your top receiver. But is he the guy to make that play?
I think the Colts have one guy on the team that could legitimately make those plays every time. And I think that's Michael Pittman Jr.
Every time?
Probably 9 out of 10. You know how many times we see that guy come out there and make just stupid catches and 50-50 balls and then get creamed and still come down with the football? I mean, it's happened so many times.
So if that's the case, then
why weren't he getting them?
Right. You see, like that's all, like, that's where I'm going with that whole thing. It's like, we talk about the, you know, tight ends make it. Is that the guy to make the play? Yeah. So the other receivers, like, is Alec ready to make that play? He shows promise. And quite frankly, there's a lot of receivers, young receivers that can make plays. They flash. They make, you know, they can run routes. They're fast if they're open. But how many times, like, when they start getting coverage, like real tight coverage, that's when you find who a real dog is. That's why there's only a certain upper echelon of, like, who are your top 10 receivers?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, well, who's the top 5 hitting free agency? Like, we need one of them dudes. We need to go get – I'm telling you, man, I'm telling you. I've been saying it all season. You got me over here sweating a little bit. But I'm just saying we got to add that to the roster. Because if we don't, then we're going into the same situation as next year of Michael Pittman makes all – he's the main playmaker, right? He's the one who's leading the team in receiving yards. And everyone else is kind of like – they flash here and there, but how consistently is it? Because of playoff teams, when you look at the playoff teams, look at their receiving corps. When you look at San Fran, when you look at I hate to say it, the Cowboys. When you look at Philly, you see where I'm going with this. Like, when you look at their receiving cores, they got two guys. They can go both. It can go either way. Like, who's going to make a play?
But then I don't know who the second guy on Kansas City is now. I don't think there is one. Kelce and everybody else isn't a guy that I feel like you can lean on.
I didn't say it, but I noticed I did not say Kansas City. Right, like, I mean, I know they're considered a playoff team, and they will be a playoff team, but like,
absolutely,
they're gonna have to win through their defense. Mahomes and Kelce, and then Pacheco is gonna have to bring up the rear.
Yeah,
right. Like, but I'm just saying, as a whole, like, when you look at the Colts and our situation, when you just look at it from a standpoint of like, who is the main playmaker other than Pittman? Yeah. Like, we're high on all of our guys, as we should be. From a fan standpoint, you gotta root for the guys. You gotta have all the hope in the world that they're gonna make a play. You gotta put that on their shoulders and really want to see these kids be successful and make plays and beat teams. But realistically, like, where does an Alec Pierce or a Granson or Ogletree really fall on a playoff team depth chart wise?
And that's that. The sad thing is, we got Alec Pierce specifically for that deep threat, 50-50, go get it, down the field guy. And when he's open, he makes the catches. When it's contested on a deep pass, contested catches, it seems like he has problems there. I'm liking lately. However, in the short range area, the mid range, you know, the 8 to 15 yards when it's contested, he seems to make those. But he's having problems with those 50-50s when it's 25, 30, 35 yards downfield, down the sideline.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I hear you. And look, Michael Pittman Jr. might be that guy for us, you know. But, you know, as you said, when you need two guys, because defenses are going to hone in on him, and they're going to lock him down with double teams or over under or whatever you want to do to take him out of the game. And then you're going to have to rely on other guys making those tough one-on-one catches.
Somebody's going to have to make a play.
Now, I would like to get back to the offensive line. And it's not just the offensive line. This goes offensive line, defense, even special teams. Man, we shot ourselves in the foot a million times. Yeah. You're talking about how the offensive line – You don't remember one time where they blocked well on a run. There was one I remember, that touchdown that was called back. Okay. That touchdown that was called back, that was blocked out very well. It was like 12 yards out, ran in almost untouched, and then bam, called back. And I'm sorry. Okay. It was a holding call, but I didn't
say it. Debatable. I said it's debatable in my opinion.
I didn't see the hold. You know, his right hand looked fine, or his left hand looked fine. I could not see the right hand. I could not see where it was at because of the angle of.
Yeah. I mean, I was clearly, no, we couldn't see it, but it had to be outside the framework. You just got to give him the benefit of the doubt to say that hand was not here. It was here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's the only way she could make sense of it. We couldn't see it, but I felt like he didn't really alter the dude's body like that.
Yeah.
To be a holding call. So,
but you know, it wasn't just the offense. I mean, every time we get in a positive situation, it would get called back or put us in a hole. And that was a problem. Defensively, we had that same issue, you know, you had jumped off sides. You had a situation where we held him to a field goal and dude literally propped himself up on somebody who you weren't supposed to do. And
right.
They went and scored a touchdown right afterwards. Kick punt return, the blocker ran into the kick return.
I know. Like, stuff like that, like Bad News Bears football. Like, Bad News Bears football. Like, it's just you and that's what I'm saying. Like, the teams that don't do that are the teams that make runs. You can't have these blunders in December. That's a September issue. It cannot be December issue when everything's on the line, it all matters. And right now, you're seeing a team that is overall, when you look at the roster top to bottom, doesn't have a ton of playoff experience on it. These are the teams that do not go far because there's no one there as a whole to really get everyone to understand this. I don't care about coaches going and making championship runs and playoff. that they don't play on Sunday. It's going to take the players as band together and for everybody to be on the same page, everybody come together before you get on that airplane, while we're in the practice field during the week, practice facility during the week, while we're at practice, everybody's got to be locked in and believe in the same thing so that we can come out on Sunday and everybody knows the deal without it even being said. But when you have like these mishaps and mistakes like this and a whole group of guys not coming to play, like, yo, everybody in the league is good. Like, over across the board, everybody is in the league. Everybody in the league is good. There's no slouches to where, like, we're about to just beat up on these dudes. Like, yeah, as a whole, that defense might not be as good as the last defense you played the week prior. But I'm telling you right now, you got super talented guys that can make a play at any given time. And if you take that lightly, like, this is a team that just lost their quarterback after you guys lost yours. This is a team that has a worse record than you by one game. This is a team that you got to understand that you got to keep them out of playoff contention too, like, because you guys are fighting for the same spots right now. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's not enough to have everybody on the same – you know that Jacksonville's wounded animal right now. You know that Houston's fighting for the same thing that you're fighting for. Like, we have a chance to say, F the wild card, I'm going to lock down this playoff spot. It's very real. It's possible it can happen, but until everyone's on the same page, it won't happen. And that goes for any team. I'm not just talking about just the Colts. Any team that's in contention to win something, if you don't come out every – now, the best teams are those teams that are ascending right now, the Denvers of the world, right, that are just hitting on all cylinders right now, playing well. You know what I'm saying? Everything's clicking. They took their lumps early in the season. They don't want to feel that again. And they're just trying to beat teams and play well. Everybody knows what that taste is of having all them points put on them early in the year. They don't ever want to feel that ever again.
See, to me, it's not just the offense. It wasn't just special teams, you know, the blunders, the mishaps. Defensively, I thought defensively they played pretty good outside of four plays. Four. Mm-hmm. Three of those were screen plays that took up over half the passing yardage, mm-hmm. right? That was nasty. Yeah. I ain't never seen – like, wait, I'll take that back. Last time I saw that was Colts Minnesota last year, all right, when they made that big 31-point comeback in the second half against the Colts, yeah. right? Yeah. And it was just screen play, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, you know? And they come back and they lit us up. This game, we let three screens go for about 170 yards. All right. And it was 145 yards. Three screens for 145 yards is ridiculous. Absolutely. There's no excuse for it. None. Once the first one happens, I can let one slide. I can let one big play from a screen slide. But once they keep doing it, you got to have your eyes open and ready for it, don't you? I mean, that's a situation where, yeah, fool me once, shame on me, right? Fool me twice. No, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. That's how it goes. Yeah.
I thought you were about to remix it a little bit or something like that.
But no. Fool me three times.
Right.
Shame on everybody.
Yeah. It can be a bad day. But here's the thing. When you have a team that rushes, when you have a team that has guys that get up the field and try to get to the quarterback all the time, you're going to be a team that's very susceptible to screens. And this is the beauty of coordinators and how they're playing games against each other. It's the game within the game. So the D coordinator, O coordinator are studying each other. They think they know their MOs. So the old coordinator for Cincy's like, oh, Gus Bradley doesn't want to rush, drops guys in the coverage. You know, like he wants guys to sit and make plays. D-line is going to rush up the field, especially early in the game, right? Especially early, they got all the juice. I'm going to hit them with a screen. I know the middle field is going to be more open because you got guys running off with the receivers, right, tight ends, what have you. They're going to be susceptible to the screen. Boom, happened. Big play. All right, wait a little bit. We got the right personnel on the field. We know what they're thinking is about to happen. Boom, hit them with another one. And on top of that, that just goes to show you that they got, it comes down to watching film. Now, I'm not saying Colts fans don't get it twisted or anything like that. Don't, I'm not saying that no one's watching film. But what I'm saying is this, is that when you get, when you see certain formations as a defensive player, just like when offensive players, as an offensive lineman, I see a certain defensive formation, you got to think, you got to know what's up. You have to have at least 3 to 5 scenarios of what can happen as I'm watching this unfold in front of me. And you got to sniff it out. I got to know when a blitz is coming. I got to know when line sets are coming. I got to know when guys are shifting. I got to know if this guy's bluffing or not, if he's coming to linebacker or he's just messing around in front of me to get me to jump off sides. He's going to drop in coverage or he's really blitzing. So as a defensive player, it's no different. I see a trips formation. Boom. I already know there's only 3 plays that can happen out of this right now with the defense that we have on the field. I see a 2x2 set. Right? I see 2 backs in the back. I got to know all the scenarios and know what's up. So it could come down to, like, I don't know. They practice screens in practice. They practice against screens for 100%. I know they threw a couple of them at them. But at the same time, it has to translate to the game when it really matters. When you don't have a script before you go out to practice and you know they're going to throw a screen in there, before you know, like, we'll make sure we have this defense in the field, that's what's going to stop it. When the real bullets are flying, your guys got to know that this is coming. This is a possibility of it coming, right? And then, quite frankly, somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to be able to break down in space, beat an offensive lineman, make a play too, right? Guys got caught in bad spots, and linemen just literally got a hand on them, or they just, like, they weren't under control, and they just reaching out. You ain't gonna, you're not going to stop anybody with an arm tackle in the NFL. So it just was a simple thing of, like, guys have to be more aware of the possibility of the plays that they can see and study film and just have a sense of urgency. And hell, if I don't see it, somebody else better be calling it out. Well, screen, something, you know what I'm saying? And so I don't put all the blame on Gus Bradley. I don't. I think everybody should be held accountable for it, right? But at the end of the day, like, we're big boys. We got to make plays when our numbers are called.
Yep. And Gus Bradley is not the only defensive court, or not the only guy that's making play calls that has a little blame to put on their shoulders. I'm sorry, but Shane Steichen does too.
Yep.
Every game this year, except yesterday, there were 3 or 4 plays where I was like, oh, well, I like that call. That's nifty. I've not seen that before. You know, whether it worked or didn't work, you know, it was something that you hadn't seen. And if I hadn't seen it, then I know that, you know, odds are, you know, if I hadn't seen it, there's a chance that, you know, the opposing defensive coordinator hadn't seen it because, you know, something new that comes out, you know, you got to put a team on their heel. I didn't see that yesterday. None, you know, not a single play.
You know, the only thing that I'll give him grace on is that as you kind of get into the season, like where you're at now, unless you have some earth-shattering, something new or different, or a wrinkle in the offense, you just got to go with what works and do that. Like, go back and fine-tune those things. And so I don't think that he wants to keep making the offense more complex than what it is. Like, in his mind, it's like, all right, I got Jonathan Taylor out. I got Minshew. I know his capabilities. My offensive line, I know what they do well. My receivers, I know what they can and can't do. My tight ends, I know what they can and can't do. This is what we've been doing well and winning some football games in the process. So I'm not going to shake things up too much.
But what about plays that have been successful in the past this year? Can't you just, you know, maybe bring one of those? You know that the players have already practiced it and ran it and it's been successful once. Why can't you try it again occasionally? Don't just one and done for the season for that play.
So if a team runs a fake punt and is successful, how many weeks do you think it's going to be until you see another fake punt?
Probably a while.
Same way, right? Because, like, those plays when you cook something up are like one-off plays that work against a certain defensive type, a front, what have you. Scheme schematically works, you know what I'm saying? But it's never something that you can you put your baseline in for a reason, and then you kind of have derivatives off of that. But then you have, like, the annexation of Puerto Rico, right? You have the if anyone is a Little Giants fan, I was like, and you're around my age, just came out in 93. Like, you know how my, like, the annexation of Puerto Rico was a special play that was cooked up at the end of the game for the Little Giants to beat the Cowboys, right? Like, you have those one or two plays that you don't, that you know are going to work against a certain situation, right? But it's perfect. We can go back to this. And another, someone else commented. I watch all the YouTube comments, by the way. Another guy commented that I was, that I don't know what I'm talking about Grover Stewart. Like, he smiled because you probably read it, right? And he's like, you know, I think he's going to be
big. All the comments.
Yeah, it's like he's going to be a big factor. And I'm like, I'm not saying he's not going to be a big factor. He's like, well, and I'm like, he just has to get back into game shape. He's like, well, he's been home this whole time working out, whatever, whatever. You can run till the cows come home. You don't have 300-some guys in there. You're not sumo wrestling with somebody every play. You can't simulate that. So, like, when people say stuff like that, I'm not saying anything to be facetious, to act like I'm better than him. I'm telling you what it is. That's why training camp has a ramp-up period of 2 to 3 weeks before you play a football game. You've got to get in there and you got to bang around and wrestle and get into that type of shape.
It's why the first few days of training camp is no pads, then shells. You work your way up the you work your way up into that shape. Otherwise, yeah, there's injuries left and right.
Right, know? Right. And so, like, perfect example, and I'll be quick with this one, but, like, they called a play, right? This is the Cincinnati offensive coordinator understanding a situation. He knew that Grover Stewart was coming back, had been out for an extensive period of time. He knew that he was going to have a lot of juice in the tank on that first series, the first couple series that he was going to be in. He knew he was going to be rushing to get up the field. He knew it. So what are we going to do? We're going to trap him. And what does Grover do? Run straight up the field and gets trapped, has zero awareness that that's about to happen to him, and boom, they run trap right up the middle for a big play. That's the stuff I'm talking about. They didn't even come back to trap for the rest of the game, but it worked that one time. You see what I'm saying? Like, so they knew. I'm thinking in my head as an O coordinator, he's going to get up the field, he's ready to make a play, he's going to be hungry. He's not going to be alert for the trap, because guess what? He hasn't felt that in 6 to 7 weeks. Anyone trying to trap him? Then he beat the center and got in the backfield. Boom, here comes the guard. Boom, see you later. Big run, right? So, like, those are the things that I'm talking about when I'm saying you got to work him back into the game. He's got to get a feel for that kind of stuff. Because I guarantee you this, if he played this whole year, you ain't getting that trap on him.
Yeah, you ain't going to get it. A lot of the game, and I will say this just from, you know, scholastic, not professional point of view, and I'm assuming it's – in the professionals, it's very similar. A lot of the game is feel. It is just kind of, you know, you kind of get you build a sixth sense of what's going on around you without even seeing it. You know, you know that, okay, this guy, he's stepping a little lighter than what you expect him to do. So he's not doing what he's normally going to be doing. He's doing something else, you know, and then you brace yourself for whatever that is, probably knowing what it is, because it's happened to you a few times already during the season.
Right.
And then when you're stepped away from the game for, like you said, a month and a half, you know, that feel kind of walks away. You got to get that feel back, right?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Like, that's all I was saying. Like, yeah, I mean, if you look at on the stat sheet, I think, what, Grover had, what, 4 solo tackles, 5 total? Yeah. Like, he was he played physical in there. Of course, for a guy that's no injuries, coming back fresh, like, he played physical. But how much can he exert in one game before it becomes a problem where he could get too tired and then it could lead to an injury or a big play, right? I'm just saying, you work a guy back in, he's got to get the feel for it. No one's ran inside zone against him in 6 weeks. No one's ran outside zone. No one's ran trap. No one's ran, you know what I'm saying? Like, no one's ran, like, he hasn't done a live pass rush against someone with pads on in that time, right? So, like, and if he put simulated, he was back home and he had pads and helmet on, he had someone else doing one-on-one pass sets, like, but it's not as realistic because there's not, you know, 4 other offensive linemen out there. There's not guys bumping into you. Like, there's not all of that.
Yeah, bumping in. You can't just take in consideration, okay, it's, you know, 300-pound man against 300-pound man, or 2 300-pound men versus 1 300-pound man. You also got to remember, it's the wash. Stuff, people keep getting moved left and right. You're getting bumped into, people falling on your feet, your legs, all kinds of stuff. You got to get into that feel, right? Again, that's another feel thing. When people start falling around you, you kind of get that feel and know, hey, bring that back foot up.
Yeah.
You know, your ankle's gone. You know,
how do you still simulate that torque on the other ankle with one leg in the air against 600 pounds or 300 pounds?
Exactly.
Like, you can't simulate that kind of stuff. So, like, that is where only you being in practice, real practice, not in season practice, because even in in-season practice, you ain't getting a game rep. You can get. I'll tell people all the time, like, I'm like, all right, young fella, you better calm down. Like, as I got older in my career, I'm getting my work for the week, but I can give you a game rep if you want a game rep. You want a game rep? Let me know if you want a game rep, because I'll give you a game. I'm like, in practice, I'm not worried about guys falling around my feet, my knees, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm not worried about that because we all take care of each other. So that's really still not a real simulation of a game. But if you want game reps, you want guys to really turn it up a notch, you got to worry about it. And it's live. That's why we say during training camp, this is live. It's live. We're cutting, we're running, we're chopping. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's live, I can expect a defensive guy to leave his feet, right? Yeah. So, like, it's just a difference, man. It's a difference.
Absolutely. Well, this is a game, in my opinion, that Colts fans and honestly, I feel like the players and coaches just need to forget. It was just a bad day. This is like a bad day at Black Rock, right? It was just a bad day. All right. You got to move on already, you know, because Saturday's coming up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? So yeah. I feel like, you know, just move on and prep yourself, get ready for the Steelers, because that's going to be a huge, huge game. With all sort, just you thought yesterday had playoff implications, this Saturday does too, right?
Yep.
I think that's going to be it for me. Do you have any final words?
Yeah, I mean, you said, you know, Colts have to forget about it. At this point, it's too late in the season to forget about it. Like, they need to today. They need to be going over that film extensively. They need to be breaking it down, figuring out, because the only thing that really hurt them was their mistakes. Like, when you look at the mistakes, it's a closer game. It's probably 21-14 and they're in a dogfight. Now we really got to play football. You know, you gave up a lot with those two bigs, the screens, like guys missing assignments. Like, you got to just go through that, clean it up, and let that sour taste stay in your mouth until Wednesday morning, and then you got to move on. But okay, you got to learn from these mistakes here late in the season, because and you got to make sure guys don't make them again, because you got to drill into them. Like, if this happens, we're going home. Like, we can't ever come back out onto the field like this ever again. For the rest of this 23-24 season, this cannot be the team that comes off the plane, the bus, out the tunnel, you know what I'm saying, from the hotel downtown Indy. It cannot be. When you wake up, you better be the team that was winning football games before, not this team that showed up against Cincy and completely, you know, crapped the bed.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be mostly a coaching point, right?
Yeah.
You know, teaching
players too. I mean,
don't make mistakes.
The players have to police themselves as well. Like, it's the point now where this part of the season, like, someone's got to be a leader on offense and defense, and someone's got to take the reins and lead the team. So it's not just coaches. It's coaches too, but it's going to have to be player-induced.
Okay. All right. Well, we still got another video. Hopefully we'll be doing today as a live stream. We'll see. It's not set in stone yet, but it's a good possibility. So keep an eye out for notifications for that. And then, of course, I am going to try to make sure we get our Steelers preview out early, since it is on Saturday. We still have to discuss that later as well. But until next time, that's going to do it for us. I'm Lawrence Owen. That's Donald Thomas. This was Believe in Colts, brought to you by Bet Online. And as usual, go Colts.
Go Colts, baby.
Do you believe?